This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
3 minutes after 12, not for the first time, I find myself thinking, thank goodness for Rachel Venables. Her concise and clear report there on the latest legal victory for Meghan Markle against the Mail on Sunday neatly explains something that in normal circumstances we would obviously have been all over on this programme, and I will not be surprised if colleagues are later in the day. But now, it being Thursday, the business demands that we turn our attention next to the only hour of the week that can deliver the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial. If you have a mystery, a conundrum, a burning question to which you know there must be an answer, there must be deliverance, there must be a soothing balm of solution that can be applied to your throbbing inquiry, then this is the hour in which that balm is administered. You ring in, you ask a question, hopefully it makes us all chuckle a bit or go, "Ooh, that's good," and then someone else rings in and answers it. Described like that, I can't believe they've turned it into a board game. But they have, and I need to remind you that the finest contribution of the week will win a copy of the James O'Brien's Mystery Hour board game, which you can, I'll also tell you how you can get hold of your own copy if you're not lucky enough to pick it up this week. And I would urge you also to consult the terms and conditions. Here's something I never thought I'd say. I mean, this counts as merch, right? This is merch. Unbelievable merch. Quite a lot of people suggesting we try and turn Beat the Sweet into some sort of board game type scenario, which really, really proves you were listening to the programme a very, very long time ago. I think the audience has increased, it's not far off tenfold, is it, since the days of Beat the Sweet? So anyway, I don't think that's going to happen, but Mystery Hour has happened, and You can get hold of it yourself, and I'll tell you how later, because I want to crack on with the business in hand. If you're not familiar with it, how best to explain it? Well, best to just listen, actually work it out for yourself. But there aren't really any rules. We try and avoid really boring questions. But in fact, over the years, things that I initially would have found boring have turned out potentially to be quite fertile ground for exploration and conversation. Generally, motoring questions don't land, but that's biased because generally motoring issues don't happen on this programme at all, on any aspect, any minute of any hour of this programme. So maybe I got that wrong as well. Phone-in radio historically treats motorists with the utmost respect, but hey-ho. And we used to get cross about repetition, but I'm too old now and my memory's too holy to remember whether, I can't even remember what I did this morning, never mind what questions we might have answered on the programme 10 years ago. 12:06 is the time. If you hear somebody else ask a question to which you know the answer, that I'm still thinking whether or not we should have given the pub landlord, Matt Hancock's friend, former contact, whether we should have given him a Ray Liotta. That would have just been too childish, wouldn't it? Especially, look, what if the interview, what if some of the clips get picked up by the big news later? I don't know whether they will or not. My sense in those matters is absolutely appalling. And as Keith points out, we are the big news now. Sounds a little bit like Ray Winston in Scum. But how would it look if in the middle of like a really potentially quite interesting intervention in the British media, we pressed the button and played him out the Ray Liotta in the middle? No, I'm glad we didn't, but he certainly qualified for one. So, Alex, if you're still listening, you get a retrospective Ray Liotta, but a silent one. 12:07 is the time. If you hear somebody ask a question to which you know the answer, ring in and answer it. And if your qualifications are amazing, if you are, you know, close to the only person in the country that could be providing the contribution that you're providing, then you may well receive you almost certainly will receive the Ray Liotta Award. 12:07 is the time. And that's pretty much the only thing that's missing from the board game, because you can do a round of applause. It's easy. You just clap your hands together. Yeah, you're writing this down. But there's no Ray Liotta element to the board game. Richard's in Chelmsford to kick things off. Richard, question or answer? Oh, we're having problems with the phone line. John's in Purley. No, he's not. Well, he is, but Richard is also in Chelmsford and he's there. Richard, question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on, Richard.
Yeah. Why do we blush when we're embarrassed?
I like that question. Well, I like it and I don't like it. Do you know why I like it?
Why is that?
Because I'm quite interested to know the answer. Do you know why I don't like it? No, I don't know the answer. Do you know why I don't like it?
Why is that?
Because it doesn't really open up any avenues for the sort of banter I like to have at the top of the programme, Richard.
Oh, it will. Trust me, it will.
But not with you, though. When's the last time you blushed? It's just not going to work, is it? Ask me...
I can't see you, but can I pose a little test?
Yeah, go on. But careful. Hang on, Keith, keep your finger close to the button. I don't know where this is going.
Yeah, because I know you don't want your listeners to listen to this, do you?
Well, I don't know what you're doing now. You've made me uneasy, so I'm going to move on. John's in Purley. John, question or answer?
It's a question,
just,
James.
Just check with Richard, will you, what he was going to say there, and we'll bring him back if he's not being a silly beggar. Carry on, John.
So it's, why do we use capital letters at the start of sentences?
Yes. Why do we use capital letters at the start of sentences? So you know it's the start of a sentence.
Yes, but doesn't the full stop at the end of a sentence tell you...
On old-fashioned printing, it would have been much harder to discern the full stop than it would be to discern a capital letter.
Okay.
Are you going to accept that? Because I just made it up. It's pretty plausible.
Okay. I don't accept it.
No, then. Good for you. I wouldn't either, seriously. So what are we looking for? Capital letters. It's going to go back. I'm certain it's going to go back to old printing quality and the way that you could make it clear that this was a new sentence. Otherwise, you're left with those classic examples of confusion caused by the absence of proper punctuation, aren't you? Like eat, shoots,
yes,
and leaves. Eat, shoots,
yeah,
and leaves and all that sort of thing. So I imagine that's the answer, but I don't know, so I'm putting it on the board. Why do we have capital letters at the start of sentences? From John in Purley. 10 minutes after 12 is the time. Anthony's in Northwich. Anthony, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on.
When did we start wearing black armbands as a symbol of mourning?
Black armbands as a symbol of mourning. I like that question. I'm going to go with Queen Victoria, but not as a definitive answer. A lot of that kind of thing, that sort of ceremonial tradition, goes back to Victoria and or Albert. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if it's linked to the death of Prince Albert.
Hmm.
But I did
see a painting. I don't know if it's actually linked or something. I was watching the Merseyside Side Derby last night, and there was players wearing black armbands too. Ray Kennedy and think it's Cliff Marshall.
Yes.
And so I was just intrigued as to where that started. And I went onto Wikipedia, as you often do. But there was, I think I saw a painting of somebody in a black armband from like the 17th century.
Oh, well, that predates Victoria and Albert, doesn't it, a lot? So it's the armband in particular. It's not the association of black with mourning, but the idea of... And it would have been military, probably, wouldn't it, before it was sportsmen and stuff like that. So the black armband as a sign of mourning, when did that begin? I like that, Anthony. Thank you very much indeed.
Okay, thank you.
No, thank you. 11 minutes after 12. Capital letters, blushing, and black armbands. Liam's in Oxford. Liam, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on.
Is it detrimental to your health to stifle or hold in a sneeze?
Oh, I like that question.
So rather than just with the whole, you know, COVID and catching your sneeze and the same with cough and cold season, why don't you just, everyone just hold your sneeze in?
You know, oddly enough, given that we were just talking about Harvington Hall and my school days, we used to tell each other, as I'm sure you did as well, that if you were unlucky and you did it wrong, you could, your eyeball could pop out. Did you hear that as a kid?
Yes.
If you sneeze with your eyes open, your eyeballs can pop out.
And that's why it's impossible to do it.
There's a kid called Toby who claimed that had actually happened to him, but his mum had put them back in again during the summer holidays.
That sounds true. That's plausible.
He's now a politician.
It couldn't happen because it's not a pressurised system or something like that between you.
It feels a bit wrong. It feels like you could burst a blood vessel or something, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If you've got a really big one.
I think you can in your eye, can't you? If you blow your nose too hard, can you burst a blood vessel in your eye?
Yes, I think you can. And the old, you know, it's all linked. Okay, I like that. You're on the board. Is it bad for your health to sort of stifle a sneeze, to not let out the air, as it were, in the time available? 12:12 is the time. 0345 60 60 973 is the number. Switchboard's gone absolutely bonkers. I got to tell you, I don't know how they cope. I just sit here blathering, chewing the fat, you know, consulting my enormous mug. Mystria, did you get double time on Mystria, actually? Dom's in Bath in Somerset. Dom, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
So the reason you blush is because your brain kind of detects the kind of awkward situations, or detects what it thinks is an awkward situation.
Yes.
And then fires some chemicals around your body to increase blood flow and increase the size of your veins and your face and that sort of thing, and therefore you go red. But it's kind of a documented. There's a lady, I can't claim knowledge of this, there's a lady called Dr. Esther Perel, who wrote a book called Molecules of Emotion, and she basically found a lot of this kind of stuff and used that as a really good example.
But what's the benefit of it, though?
It's a social cue thing. If you're not embarrassed by a situation, you don't go red.
Yeah.
If you are embarrassed by a situation, you go red. So going red is actually that way of flagging to other people in your social group that you're embarrassed by something. But it's interesting.
I can't tell whether you've answered it or just made the question more complicated.
Yeah, it's the reason why you get embarrassed.
Yeah.
Is a different question to why you blush.
No, I know that. Blushing is So why do you want to tell your social group that you're embarrassed? Do you see what I mean? I don't know if you've answered the question or just made it more complicated.
I think that's another thing about why you would smile or why you would grimace or that sort of thing with people. So I think it's all that set of social cues around your face. And that comes down to the kind of social dynamics of language and that sort of thing. So the fact that different animals have the ability to smile and you know, monkeys can do things that are very similar to us and other animals.
So the more communicative you are, the better your evolutionary advantage in the
most of the time. It depends on your kind of social group. If you're a solitary animal, typically you don't have this ability to communicate. And you typically get down
And qualifications are you've read Esther Perel.
Yeah, exactly, which I recommend as well to anybody because it teaches you a lot about how your brain works.
I'm going to give you a round of applause, but with the cat flap open, for the possibility of a miniature steward's inquiry, because there may be a bit more to it than meets the eye. Do you know what I mean? Something like a bit closer to the fight or flight response
I would love to know that there was something magical in there.
Like the benefit of communicating your embarrassment, rather that's what's missing.
Yeah, I mean, I wish there weren't any sensitivity in the end of my toe, big toe as well.
Yes.
When I walk around,
But except that you don't. You don't when you think about it, because otherwise it would get gangrene and fall off, because you'd be banging it all the time, and you wouldn't take any precautions to avoid banging it, and you would therefore destroy it.
Sometimes that feels preferable, though.
Well, are you particularly prone to big toe-related injuries, are you, Dan?
It's just one that sticks in my mind.
Yeah, fair enough.
I've broken both my toes in a month before. So it
what were you doing?
Great.
What did you do?
I've lived in the same place 10 years, 1 month, never broken a bone in my life, one moat, same bed, two different corners, two different toes, same amount of pain.
Were you,
there you go.
I don't know whether I should ask this on live radio. Were you in the bed at the time or were you walking?
No.
Oh, I see. So you're possessed of a particularly violent swing, are you? Your leg, swing your legs like a sort of stormtrooper.
Well, I think it might have been one of those, I've got 10 minutes to get in the car before being late for work sort of situation.
And you actually broke the toe?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I just winced.
Both of them,
I didn't know my toes could wince. Two toes gone in a month.
They go very strange colour, and you would go, wow, I hope gangrene kicks in so that it'll drop off and I won't ever have to problem again.
This is what I meant with the first fella, about a question that opens the door for a bit of enjoyable banter, you see. This is what we want, broken toes in a question about in an answer to a question about blushing. You certainly a round of applause. Thank you, Tom.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, thank you. And we'll know who to go to if we've ever got a question about broken toes, albeit there may be a little bit more to that answer. I think what Richard was probably looking for was a bit more of the why of it than the what of it, but I could be wrong. It has been known.
You pay your business credit card back every month. Your business credit card pays you back every month. At Barclaycard Business, we do things differently. So with the Barclaycard Select Cashback Credit Card, we pay you back 1% cashback on all your eligible business spend, with no cap and no annual fee. To apply for a card for your business, search Barclaycard Business. Cashback T's and C's and exclusions apply. The approval of your application depends on your financial circumstances and borrowing history. T's and C's apply.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
12:19 is the time. Before we continue, just a quick thank you to everybody who has sent me details of their Spotify listening over the year, because the two podcasts that we do, you get a podcast of the whole radio show. I don't know whether you knew that. If you're not able to listen live every day, you can get a podcast of pretty much the whole radio show. And of course, full disclosure, my interview series has had an amazing run in the last couple of months. But I think we're up over 40% on Spotify year on year. So thank you for that. And it's wonderful to have you on board. Long may it continue. 20 minutes after 12 is the time. There is also a Mystery Hour podcast, but I keep forgetting to get on top of that and tweeting it out furiously and punting it. But there is a separate segment every Thursday afternoon if you haven't caught Mystery Hour this week. Obviously, you can't join in. So come 4 or 5 o'clock on a Thursday, I normally get a few messages on the old Twitter saying, oh no, I was just about to ring in and answer that question, then I remembered I was listening on podcast. But it could be revision now, couldn't it, for the board game, the podcast. It is 20 minutes after 12. Questions that still need answers. Why do sentences begin with capital letters? When did the wearing of black armbands as a sign of mourning begin? Is it unhealthy to stifle a sneeze? And I think we've answered the blushing question, but there may be room for more. Is there anything else? Is that everything? I think that's everything. And remarkably, because that was a particularly busy first 15, I have two phone lines free now, which you might be able to grab if you can answer either any of those questions that you have just heard, or if you have a question of your own that you are keen to get on the board. So honestly, every second that you spend texting me to complain that you can't get through is a second that you could have spent pressing redial. So you do the maths. You do the cost-benefit ratio. It's obvious, isn't it? Emily's in Epsom. Emily, question or answer?
It's an answer.
Carry on.
So it's about the one where, is it dangerous to stifle a sneeze?
Yes.
So as humans, when we, the reason we need to sneeze is because there's something in our nasal or in our up there that shouldn't be there.
Yes.
So our body naturally builds up an amount of pressure to help us get rid of it.
Yes.
And that's why we sneeze. However, if that pressure isn't released either through our mouth or our nose, it's very rare, but it can cause blood vessels to burst and even our eardrums to burst.
Because so it's got to go somewhere. Because it's got to go somewhere, that pressure.
That's it. It's the pressure's got to go somewhere. So normally it comes out either through our mouth or through our nose. And normally when we sneeze, we either extract an amount of saliva or snot, and that's usually containing what's not meant to be in our body. So it's either germs or sometimes it's bits of dust and fluff. And but our body produces that pressure, but if we don't release that pressure, it can cause us to burst our eardrums or burst blood vessels. So although in COVID...
Better out than in is a fairly good motto for life, but it's particularly apt here. What are your qualifications?
So for me, I've got qualifications in... I'm a sports professional.
No, just how do you know this? Where did you learn this? Is it more specific?
So I studied anatomy and physiology.
There you go.
In college and in school, and I went on to be in the sports industry and fitness. So
fantastic.
Studied the whole...
No, that's brilliant. That's fine. Just the qualification. I just needed to know what you did at college. No, that's all right. I mean, I'd be giving you my cycling proficiency, my bag of gymnastics award for all sorts of... You name it. Swimming with the one where I got the leather brick, swimming a length in my pyjamas. Should see my CV, Emily. It's a work of art. And the line about, I mean, obviously I know the answer to this, but just to clarify, if you sneeze with your eyes open, your eyeballs won't fall out. Toby at school in 1983 was lying to us.
Yeah, I don't think our eyeballs can fall out. It's more though when we close our eyes to help to do. It's a natural reaction to release the pressure, but yes. Your eyes shouldn't pop out. If they do, I'd be very worried.
Yeah, well, that's a very acute observation there, Emily. Very important medical advice. If your eyes pop out, you should be very worried. It's 23 minutes after 12. Round of applause for Emily.
Thank you.
No, thank you. Beautifully done. Chris is in Brighton. Chris, question or answer?
Question, please.
Yes.
When did sports people, predominantly, I don't know, racing drivers, I was watching this with my son, when did sports people first start spraying champagne to celebrate a victory?
I like that. No, I like that. I've always in the back, I don't know how old you are, but I'm of an age now where every single question that comes up on Mystery Hour, I'm thinking, have we done that before? I just can't remember whether we've done that. What was that fella's name? You know, the one that used to do the thing. My memory is Swiss cheese, but and that means I can't remember the answers, obviously, never mind whether or not we've had the question before. But I mean, when are we looking at for champagne? Sort of 17th century, is it? When was Dom Perignon doing his stuff?
I'll take you on that.
Yeah, well, I was hoping you wouldn't. I was hoping you'd correct me. So I was just thinking it probably kicked off before Formula One kicked off.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's
predominantly Formula One.
I know it is now, but they may have invented it. I mean, you don't sort of... Oh, yeah, I love it, yeah. When did they start using champagne to celebrate sporting victories? You're on. I like it a lot. Chris, thank you. 25 minutes after 12 is the time. Martin is in Eastbourne. Question or answer, Martin?
Just a question, mate. Do dogs recognise their own breed?
As in the kind of special...
Well,
I mean, the sexual lives of dogs, which sounds like one of those novels that was fashionable a few years ago, doesn't it? Like Ukrainian taxi tractor drivers or something like that. But the sex lives of dogs... Is that a Wes Anderson film? The sex lives of dogs suggest that they're not very good at... Or they're not that fussed at distinguishing between direct breeds, doesn't it?
I wouldn't know.
What do you mean you wouldn't know?
Well, I'm not a dog, so...
I know you're not a dog, but you're familiar with the fact that they're just as likely to get it on with a dog that's not the same breed as they are with a dog that is the same breed, which is why most of the dogs on the planet are mongrels.
All right, I'll take that.
All right, I'll leave it on the board. I don't know. Dr. Dog will know if he's listening, Vieri. whichever European capital he happens to be in today. He'll be on the line, no doubt, if he can get through. But don't be put off. You're allowed to try as well. So do dogs recognise each other's breed? When does champagne start getting used by sports people? The origin of black armbands and the reason why we use capital letters at the beginning of sentences. Charles is in Golders Green.
Hello.
Hello, Charles. Question or answer?
I've got a question, mate.
Good man.
Is sign language a universal language, or do people sign in different languages?
Well, the answer is no, it's not a universal language, and people do sign in other languages. American Sign Language is recognised as a... is it American Sign Language? I forget. But no, you won't be using the same sign language for someone in China that you would use for someone in England.
Why is that?
Why is that? I don't know. Yeah. So you're only allowed one question.
So you mean to tell me, so in England and in China, they sign different languages. So there's a different sign for a door than there is in China than there is in England.
I don't know which bit of you're only allowed one question it was that you didn't understand,
no,
Charles. You have different forms of sign language.
Oh.
Why do you want to know?
No, because I just thought it was like, it just doesn't make sense.
Why doesn't it? Like, why would deaf people be more likely to all speak the same language than non-deaf people?
Because it's not like you're talking actual physical words, you're signing.
Well, you're literally talking actual physical words. I mean, when you're talking, you're not talking actual physical words, are you? You're talking verbal words.
Yeah, verbal words. But yeah. I thought it would be universal.
You would have thought so, but no. I guess they must have developed at different times in different places. So if you're in, corner of...
So a deaf person from Bangladesh wouldn't be able to...
Well, no, I don't know that. I don't know. All I can tell you is that there is more than one sign language. Whether or not American or English sign language or whatever you want to call it, whether or not that is, very, very widespread, I do not know. But I do know that there are more... we've done it before on the programme and we got a good answer. And there is definitely more than one sign language, which is all you need as an answer to your question, isn't it?
I'll take that. No worries.
I think it's in double figures, actually. But it's not... It's obviously... There aren't as many sign languages as there are languages in the world for the reason that made you ask the question, because it seems like a bit of a waste of energy, almost.
Yeah. No worries, mate. I'll take your answer for it.
Well, thank you very much, Charles. I like the question. And a round of applause for me, which, of course, qualifies me for this week's Mystery Hour board game. But I don't know whether I'd get that one past the terms and conditions. Can you check the terms and conditions? See if there's anything there about the presenter winning the prize on his own programme. I'm not asking your opinion. I'm asking you to check the terms and conditions at lbc.co.uk, which, of course, everybody else is welcome to do. Dogs and breeds, champagne and sports people, black armbands and mourning, capital letters and sentences. It's all to play for this week on Mystery Hour. The number you need if you want to join in is 03456060973. And Amelia Cox is here now with your headlines.
Every tackle... Every through ball. Every shot. And every goal. Powered by Hypermotion technology, FIFA 22 plays, looks and sounds better than ever. FIFA 22 on PlayStation 5. Powered by football. Play now.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
33 minutes after 12 is the time. 03456060973 is the number you need. I've actually, for once, got a mystery of my own that I have remembered. I normally forget to do... You know what it's like? It's like jokes. Some people have got a great memory for jokes. Other people have got a great memory for, I don't know, the forensic detail of a far right politician's past life. It's horses for courses. But I'm very bad at remembering jokes. And every week, like you, something will happen. One of the girls will say something, or Keith will make another sparkling contribution to public discourse. And I'll think, well, that's a good question for Mystery Hour. And then come 12 o'clock on a Thursday, boom, nothing. I got nothing. Tumbleweed. But I have actually got quite a good one this week. Can I put it on the board, do you think? Where does... what was it called? Whamageddon? No, what was the thing that we did yesterday called? Where does Whamageddon come from? Is it my old mates from Absolute Radio or one of the other radio stations? Because there's quite a lot of theft that goes on in radio ideas. So an Australian radio company who completely ripped off one of Chris Moyles' brilliant features on Radio X the other month. I mean, just absolutely shamelessly. I think they even said live on air, and we've nicked this idea off one of the biggest DJs in the UK. When Danny Wallace used to, well, he still does do a great show on Radio X, but when he was doing a daily show on Radio X, he once did a feature called James O'Brien's Mystery Hour, which I thought was both very, very cool and very, very kind, because other radio presenters have just done their own rubbish version of it and pretended that it was all their own idea. I didn't nick the idea off anybody, but equally, to claim that having a phone-in programme that essentially boils down to Q&As was a stroke of incisive genius would be ridiculous. It's not the questions and answers that make Mystery Hour, it's the bits in the margins. It's the margins that make Mystery Hour. But I think Whamageddon must have started as a radio game. And yesterday I committed one of the biggest faux pas of my entire career. A career, as you will know, that is littered with faux pas. Because I played... Am I allowed to say it? I can say it, aren't I? Yeah. I played a tiny little clip of George Michael's Last Christmas. And Whamageddon is a game played every Christmas in which you have to go for as far into December as you possibly can without saying... without listening to Last Christmas. God knows how you do this. You'd have to live in Perda or walk around with headphones on or something like that. And normally you'd be listening to LBC, you'd think you're safe. I've had so many people got in touch to say, oh, for heaven's sake, James, I thought I'd listen to LBC. Not only am I unlikely to hear Last Christmas, but O'Brien never does that lazy bit of production thing where they choose a little snatch from a pop song in order to vaguely accompany a sort of semi-relevant story or conversation. So I should have been... I'm belt and braces for Whamageddon. Quite a lot of speech radio often plays a little clip of music to, I don't know why, to be honest with you, oil the wheels or cross your fingers and hope the phones might start ringing. We don't need to do any of that. So we never do that. We never, ever do that. So not only were you listening to a speech radio station, but you were listening to a speech radio programme that never plays vaguely relevant little pieces of music to accompany a conversation. And I let you down. I let you down so badly. And I didn't know what it was. I had no idea what it was. So there you go. I'm allowing myself a question this week. Where does it come from? Who started Whamageddon? I think I know, judging by one of the radio stars that got in touch with me yesterday. But I haven't yet achieved chapter and verse. So hopefully you can tell me. 12:37 is the time. Mark's in Barrow-in-Furness. Mark, question or answer?
It's an answer. I could have said something about sign languages, but I rang up about capital letters.
Good, carry on.
At the beginning of sentences. And this is mainly a matter of our alphabet, which is officially the Roman alphabet.
Yeah.
Most other scripts don't have a distinction between small letters and capital letters.
Oh, yeah.
And the Roman alphabet didn't until relatively late. If you look at Roman inscriptions, it's all capital letters. There's no small letters. There's no distinction.
No.
And that only started in late ancient times and into the Middle Ages.
Yes.
But the insistence on a capital letter at the beginning of a sentence, like a lot of other punctuation features, which you and I discussed a while ago, in fact, on this show, goes back to the origins of printing in late Middle Ages and early modern times, when a lot more people were reading rather than listening to people talking.
Yes.
And it became important to signal the boundaries between sentences. And that's also why a lot of punctuation became standardized, to signal clause boundaries and so forth as well. So it really goes back to that. But even now, if you see printed Latin, it's normally printed without sentence initial capitals.
How would you know then? Would you just, I mean, I suppose order of words, if you have the verb at the end of a sentence like you do in Latin, that could almost be a punctuation mark in itself.
Yes, it could. And, of course, when reading things out, people will pause at sentence boundaries anyway. But,
yes.
Yeah, but reading Latin, yeah. I mean, there'll be a full stop as Latin is now printed.
Sure, but not in the original.
No. And even now, with the Roman alphabet, there are some special cases. So, for example, there's the word in Afrikaans, which means the indefinite article, is spelt apostrophe N, and it never takes the capital letter. So even when it's at the beginning of the sentence, the next word gets the capital letter.
Got it. No, I like it. I know the answer. Sorry, go on.
Does that make sense? There's something similar in Gaelic, but that's probably the best example. So it's very much a thing with English and other languages written nowadays in the Roman alphabet that this happens. And it, even then, it didn't really start till till the origins of printing.
We haven't spoken for a while. Is that because no suitable questions have come up, or have you had better things to do?
A couple of times I ran out of time when I had answers.
You didn't get on. Because I have to tell you, Mark, I know I've told you this before, but I you've got a gift. I could listen to you all day. We should do a podcast together or something. You are such a knowledgeable man and such a brilliant communicator. It's a pleasure to have you on the programme.
Thank you. If you're serious about that, I'm up for it.
Yeah, I think I am serious about it, actually. So
well, yeah, I mean,
we should do something, shouldn't we? Let's have a little think about what we can do, what might be good. I'll get the hive mind involved as well, because to establish for the benefit of people new to the programme, what are your qualifications?
I'm an academic linguist. I taught linguistics and research linguistics for many years.
I love it.
My last real job was at Monash in Melbourne. But I remain very active. I'm a consultant.
We could do a podcast with questions that were sent in.
Yeah.
Rather than it being live on the radio.
I used to have a show like that on a radio station in Melbourne. I'd be perfectly happy
you?
For that.
Okay. Well, give your details to the producer, and I'll look into that. Probably in the new year, but. Because I've got a board game to flog.
That's fine.
I've got a board game to flog, Mark. I can't be setting up new podcasts.
Thank you very much for your enthusiasm.
No, you're an absolute legend, and everybody says so. Whenever you're on, you get so much. Anyway, have another round of applause. What a beautiful answer. I love that. I nearly broke the habit of a lifetime then and let him have a crack at the sign language question as well. But I had satisfactorily answered it, although you will all now be aware that Mark could have provided us with a heck of a lot more detail and information. I just, the only reservation I've got is whether or not Susie Dent's already doing something similar. We could take on Dent. Me and Mark could take on the Dent. Seriously, that might be. Yeah, you can take your linguistic podcast wars right through into the middle of 2022. You could have just witnessed history being made there. 12:41 is the time. On the other hand, you may not have done. Will's in Colchester. Will, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on, Will.
Answer to the champagne.
Oh, marvellous.
At Formula One,
yes.
or car racing. It was done by accident in 1966 at the Le Mans 24-hour race.
Really? By accident?
Yeah. It went off because of the hot weather.
So they were going to take it home and drink it. So it was part of the prize.
Well, no, they would open it, but it sprayed out because of the pressure.
Why did they have a bottle of champagne?
Because in the first the first Grand Prix race which started in 1950, the first one in France was in the Champagne region,
right?
And they gave out bottles of champagne, and that's where it started. That you were awarded a bottle of champagne. It happens to quite a lot of races, but the first time it sprayed was 1966 Le Mans, and then somebody. I think it was an American driver copied it
right.
From then on.
At the Indy and, 500 or something like that.
I don't know what the race
no.
was, but it was an American
and the next thing you know, you can't win a race without spraying champagne all over the place. So you're over the line.
Apart from the Middle Eastern, it's not champagne, obviously. It's rose water, isn't it?
Something fizzy.
Yeah,
Stuff. So previously they would open it, it might fizz up a little bit, but then they just drink it as part of it.
Yeah, but this went off, and then...
No, I understand what you said. I was just trying to establish why that was the first time it happened, because champagne very rarely... I'm actually rather good at it, Will, but that's just years of practice. I can take the cork off without any fizz at all. It's all about twisting the bottle rather than the cork, you see.
Right.
But
I'm a Prosecco person.
Well, same thing, standard thing. But that... So it's just it turned into a... Everyone had so much fun when that fella started spraying it all over the place in 1966 that it stuck.
Yeah.
Love it. Qualifications?
That was not a Formula One race. That was Le Mans.
It was Le Mans. Le Mans 24-hour, qualifications?
Yeah. I do classic car racing as a kind of hobby. Around Europe, we do the Mille Miglia car race.
Ever
big bottle of champagne.
Ever come top? Ever been on top of the podium?
We're not Italian and we don't have an Italian car. So
just making up the numbers, but doing it for the love.
You've got to have an Alfa Romeo, I'm afraid.
Is that right? Alfa Romeo's all the way. What are you in then? Yeah. A Jaguar?
No. We have a pair of Healey Silverstones. I'm the mechanic. So.
Fantastic. So, well, never mind. You may not ever have won a bottle of champagne, but you've won a mystery hour round of
applause. We buy our own.
That doesn't count, Will.
1,000 miles.
That's a bit like ringing up mystery hour, getting it wrong, and then sitting at home going.
Well, why not?
You can't buy your own champagne in a race. Well,
fair.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Why not? Now behave yourself while I give you a round of applause.
Thank you.
Thank you. Martin's in Oldham. Martin, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
It's dishwasher related.
Go on. Whoa! How to draw someone in? Go on.
Yeah. So when you take your items out of the dishwasher, the plastic items always seem to be full of water droplets, and yet the other items don't seem to be. Why would that be?
It's the temperature, isn't it? And conductivity.
Well, the temperature affects it all, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, but so differently, because they've got different levels of conductivity. So the plastic stays warmer for longer or gets colder quicker, whatever it is that makes the condensation dissipate faster.
Yeah, OK.
I think it must be. I'll leave it on the board. I like it, but I thought it was going to be, why is it full of water? In which case it would be because the plastic is lighter, so it gets blown all over the place, ends up upright, and then fills up with water from other parts of the washing cycle. But that wasn't actually the question.
Yeah, that's usually the case.
Yeah, that is usually the case. It must be the answer. It's Occam's razor, isn't it? Why has the water evaporated from that vessel but not from that vessel? It must be to do with the heat of the relevant vessels, mustn't it? It has to be, surely.
Okay.
Don't you think?
Probably. So the pot items stay warmer for longer, so it evaporates, yeah.
I'm putting it on the board, though, because I don't have any qualifications and I could be wrong. Martin, great work. Thank you very much. 12:45 is the time. I'm going to do a quick text vote. I'm going to call him Professor Mark, the linguistics professor. Thank you to Scott for suggesting a possible title for our podcast. I'm not confident after a fairly high-energy show, where I sometimes misspeak as the end of the show approaches, get a little tired, get the time wrong, get the day wrong, got the month wrong yesterday. I'm not going to risk saying that out loud on the radio at this time, because it is a very deliberate pun on a very rude word. But it is perhaps a potentially great name for my future podcast with a linguistics professor. The question I need to ask you is, knowing Mark as you do up in Barrow and Furness, having heard his very erudite and academic contributions to the programme, and yet somehow at the same time very accessible and warm, if he were to win the Mystery Hour board game, would he be a happy recipient of it, do you think? Or would it be a little bit beneath his academic status?
You pay your business credit card back every month. None of the happy. Your business credit card pays you back every month. At Barclaycard Business, we do things differently. So with the Barclaycard Select Cashback Credit Card, we pay you back 1% cash back on all your eligible business spend, with no cap and no annual fee. To apply for a card for your business, search Barclaycard Business. Cashback T's and C's and exclusions apply. The approval of your application depends on your financial circumstances and borrowing history. T's and C's apply.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
So you've probably heard one minister this morning telling, I think Todd, did he tell LBC, George Freeman? Was he talking to Nick when he said he was not going to have a Christmas party? He was cancelling the Christmas party for his department, I think. And another minister, I think it was Therese Coffey, urging people not to kiss others under the mistletoe. You'll be delighted to learn that number 10 spokesman has just said, don't cancel your Christmas parties and kiss whoever you like under the mistletoe. The second bit clearly taking Boris Johnson's favourite modus operandi to the wider country at large. So there it is, clarity and leadership for you once again, Brexit Britain style. Two government ministers say maybe think about cancelling your Christmas party, and certainly don't go around snogging anybody under the mistletoe. And number 10 spokesman says don't cancel your Christmas parties and kiss whoever you like. And you think I exaggerate. 12:51 is the time. Anthony is in Launceston. Question or answer, Anthony?
Hey James, I got a question.
Let's do it.
Right, so I live in the beautiful county of Cornwall.
You do?
And my postcode begins with the letters PL, Papa Lima.
Oh, yes.
Now, that stems, obviously, PL1 is in Plymouth.
Yes.
But it extends as far as like, Boscastle and Tintagel, which go up to PL32,
right,
and down as far as St Austell, which is PL25.
Yeah, of course.
And that's a huge area.
It is big.
So I'm wondering whether our postcode has the biggest area in the county,
geographical,
the
geographical area of a single postcode, and by postcode we mean the two beginning capital letters.
Yeah, I'd say so, because PL just stretches all that
distance.
I don't know what the square mileage is.
Doesn't matter.
Huge.
It sounds enormous. Mine's much smaller than that. Mine is much, much smaller than that. But on the other hand, Anthony, size isn't everything.
No. Sometimes it's the quality. I nearly wanted to ask whether we go for like the most addresses within a postcode area, but I just think...
No, this is more interesting. So what is the question? The question, are you literally going to say, is PL the biggest postcode area, or are you going to say, what is the biggest postcode area?
Up to you, mate.
That's not your question. The customer is always right, Anthony.
Well, I think PL must be one of the biggest, if not the biggest. So should we just ask, is it the biggest?
Yeah, okay. And then to answer the question and prove that it's not, someone would have to tell us what is. So you're golden,
exactly,
aren't you?
You covered both ways. Best of both worlds.
I love it. 12:52, I hope we've got time. Is PL the biggest geographical postcode area in the UK? 03456060973, brackets. And if it isn't, what is? Close brackets. Kate, two. I know what this means. Two Kates in Bounds Green, which means I have a fairly clear idea of which question is going to be answered. Kate number one.
Hi, hello there. Hello. I have Dr. Kate Rowley here. Hello, it's us again. We're responding to the question to do with, is sign language universal?
Yes.
So the answer is, well, it's a very easy answer. It's no, it's not universal. It's impossible because sign language evolved in different countries all over the world. So it's absolutely impossible for one sign language to have evolved because people didn't meet each other from all over the world. They just developed their own home language, their local language. People assume that sign language is universal because sign language is a visual mode of communication, and that's true. Many signs are iconic, so there's a strong relationship between what a sign looks like to the actual object or the thing or the action, for example. In British Sign Language, an American Sign Language, for example, for tree, it's very iconic. You make the shape of a tree with your hand. But in other sign languages, Japanese, for example, it's still iconic, but they've chosen a different representation for the same word, tree, or the same object. Other signs like ball, again, very iconic. Push, the verb to push. Drink, again, is very iconic. But many words and signs are arbitrary. They're not iconic. For example, what, who, why, where. These are arbitrary signs and they're different in different sign languages all over the world. So those arbitrary items are differently signed.
Fantastic.
Just if you think about the equivalence to spoken language as well, there are some universal items in spoken language, for example, mama and papa as well. They're very easily recognised all over the world.
Like roots as well. You need to. I know, obviously, Dr. Kate Rowley. I remember from last time. You just need to remind me who you are, Kate. First, Kate.
Oh, hi. I'm Kate Furby. I'm an interpreter.
Kate, you're interpreting for Dr. Kate Rowley, who is an academic at UCL who works in this field. Another round of applause, I think, for you both.
Thank you.
I have to tell you, Dr. Rowley, that the response we received, and Kate, who's interpreting for you here, the response we received last time you were on was really special. So I'm so grateful to you for doing this again.
You're absolutely welcome. It's our pleasure. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. Thank you.
No, thank you both so much. Thank you. 12:56 is the time. And I want to choose my words carefully because I don't want to sound like I'm being flippant or something like that. But that is magical, right? This is a radio phone-in and we are taking a couple of calls now from a deaf doctor who works in the field of linguistics and spends an awful lot of her time in the field. A lot of her passion is dedicated to trying to break down barriers between the communities. I just love that. You'll allow me a moment, I'm sure. 12:56 is the time. Sean is in Maidenhead. Sean, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on, Sean.
Inverness has got is the largest postcode area in the country. It's got 52.
Oh, you is that how you measure it, by the number of numbers after the letters?
Yeah, so IV, I think the guy had PL 20-something.
He did.
This is Inverness has got 52. You can ask me how I know that. So I
will in a minute. Give me a chance, will you? Everyone's a critic. So how do the numbers refer to a number of properties, though, or a geographical area?
I did look this up, and this was 15, 20 years ago. It's something like each one, so PL1, IV1, can have a certain number of deliverable addresses.
Addresses. So we don't know for sure then that Inverness covers the most land, the most ground, do we?
It's the biggest postcode area in the UK.
Is it the biggest area?
Well, it's a big area.
It's a big area, but so is Cornwall. He was going all the way out to Tintagel.
IV52 goes to Wick, because I drove up the A9 all the way to Wick, and we were looking at hotels, basically, and they all had the same postcode, which is why.
That's pretty strong. I'm going to give you a round of applause, because an awful lot of other people have texted in Inverness. But what, have we got a steward's inquiry already? Have we? Hang on, Nicholas is in Bexley. Don't go away, Sean. Nicholas, quickly.
Steward's inquiry. The biggest single area, James, is Belfast, because Belfast is the entirety of Northern Ireland. So for surface area of the country, Belfast biggest, Inverness possibly third behind Perth.
There you go, Sean. Qualifications, Nicholas, qualifications?
Did Royal Mail 11 weeks as a postman during furlough.
11 weeks?
11 weeks.
You're a blooming amateur. You're an amateur.
Yeah, I know.
You barely start, terrible, you barely touch the sides.
I'll defer to the part-time postman.
Thank you.
A round of applause for the part-time postman. Oh, great work, lads. And do you know what? I'm going to give them both a board game, both of them, I think, this week, because that was a lovely moment. Unless Dr. Kate... Oh, flipping it. Shall I give out loads? I need to check. I have to pay for them. This is okay. We'll give out quite a lot this week, but they will definitely include the last four people to appear on the programme. And that is it, as you can tell in the background. Terms and conditions are available at lbc.co.uk. Sheila Fogarty is here.
Thank you. Sledging you as ever.